This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Huggins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Madden. What are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
Pleased to welcome on today's AA podcast one of our absolute favorite guests, the voice of the NBA on ESPN and ABC, the one and only Mike Breen is our guest today. Mike, welcome and thanks for coming back onto the show.
Matt, my pleasure. Always good to talk to you.
We talk with you a day after the second consecutive buzzer beater in this Cavs-Bulls series. Can you remember having back-to-back games like that, and what was that like being in the arena, announcing those games, and just following the incredible roller coaster ride that this series has been?
Well, it's the first time I've had back-to-back games where it decided at the buzzer. And in the playoff situation, with the stakes so high, it just made it that much more fun and enjoyable. The United Center is a great basketball venue. The fans are there, fabulous. I even made a comment on the Friday night game. It's not as loud as the old Chicago Stadium, which they used to call the Madhouse on Madison. And that's the loudest building, the old Chicago Stadium, loudest building I've ever been in for a basketball game. But it was pretty darn close the other night. So it was thrilling. And the interesting dynamic of the two buzzer beaters of one happens and the place absolutely explodes, and the second one, and it's amazing how quiet it gets so quickly.
Wow.
So the disparity in the reaction was unbelievable. And I always think back to what most NBA players say. Most NBA stars will tell you they enjoy more silencing a road crowd with a game-winning shot as opposed to firing up the home crowd with a game-winning shot. I've always been interested in those responses, and I would say 95 out of 100 guys will tell you they'd rather silence a road crowd.
And I think LeBron James might say that as well after yesterday's game, especially how it played out down the stretch. But at any level of basketball, that's the first time you've had back-to-back buzzer beaters, because you've called a lot of basketball games over the year, Mike.
Yes. I'm trying to think if in the Poughkeepsie High School leagues, I haven't had back-to-back back 30 years ago. But I think it's the first time. I was trying to rack my brain on if it ever happened before. But even with all the Knick games and the Knick and ESPN combinations, it's the first time back-to-back decided. I'm doing a lot of back-to-back close games decided in the final minute. Some maybe even back-to-back decided on the final play. But never game-winning shots as the clock expires back-to-back.
That's pretty incredible to just embrace as a basketball fan what we saw this past weekend. To think that it's something that you've never seen before as the voice of the league now. And to think that those weren't the only buzzer beaters. That we also had Paul Pierce in Washington bank one of the horn as well.
I'm watching the game in my hotel room. And I'm hooting and hollering and jumping up and down just because it's so exciting. And I know the NCAA tournament is so thrilling and fantastic to watch, but to me there is nothing better than NBA playoff basketball. And when you get two teams going at it, and this weekend is a perfect example, to me it's basketball at its best. And the cool thing about the two Chicago Cavs games, because it wasn't just the final shot, it was the shots that led up to them. I mean, each team was hitting big shots. I mean, Derrick Rose makes that brilliant move to the basket right before LeBron's shot. And then as LeBron's bringing the ball up the floor, his coach is trying to call a timeout, and he doesn't have timeout. So there's so much going on even prior to the shot. Just made it so much more dramatic.
As a broadcaster, is there anything better than these close playoff games that are decided in the last minute, as we saw this weekend on the final shot?
No, absolutely not, Matt. And people sometimes will say, who are you rooting for? And my response is always the same. I said, I just want it decided at the buzzer. Doesn't matter to me which one, as long as it's decided at the buzzer. And when you get games like that, during the course of a long season, there are a lot of games that are over midway through the second. And you know, for me this year, broadcasting the Knicks was a challenge with all the struggles they went through. But, you know, when you're doing four games in five nights in the middle of February and your flight gets canceled and you have to stay an extra night somewhere because of the snow, you think about these games and that gets you through the long rigors of the season because this is what we all do it for.
When you look at this series, Mike, and really the second round of the playoffs as a whole, it's been a yin and yang so far. We went through the first round, not a lot of excitement, not a lot of drama. This second round, though, all of the road teams winning at least one game out of the first two and getting a split. You see this Cavs-Bulls series tied at two. Golden State, Atlanta, both top seeds in a bit of trouble. The Clippers doing what they're doing out west. It's been really fascinating because last year we had such an exciting first round. This year the playoffs have really picked up in intensity in this second round.
Exactly, and I was surprised to see, since they went to this format, it's only the second time ever, and this is over 30 years, only the second time ever that all four conference semifinals were tied at one. And I was shocked to see that. I remember back in the old days in the 90s, it always seemed to be, you know, the home team would win the first two, the road team would win the next two games on their home floor, and it'd be 2-2, and then, of course, the pivotal game five, and that's how it would swing. But there's, I think teams are better on the road, and I don't necessarily know the reason why, but I think teams are better road-ready, better prepared to win games on the road than they were, say, 15, 20 years ago, and that's what makes this round so good because we've had so many road wins right away within the first two games.
How many of these eight teams remaining are legitimate championship contenders in your mind?
Well, I think of the four West teams, right now Houston is obviously, they've gone sideways, and I think it's going to be impossible for them to come back and win this series. I think right now they're a beaten team. Now, it truly is amazing, and it even surprises me every year how one victory can completely turn a team around, can completely change the perception of how they view themselves, how their opponent views themselves, how the fans and the media are looking at it. But they look like a beaten team right now, and the Clippers are playing with so much confidence. So I would leave Houston out of it. The other three, absolutely all with a chance to win the championship. You know, Golden State they're reeling right now, and I think, you know, they got hit with a haymaker, and they're staggering. But if they win tonight, then they're in good shape, and they're right back 2-2 with the home court, two of the next three on that unbelievable home court. And I think Memphis has shown that they can beat anybody right now. They're a team that has been together. Their core has been together now 6 years, and that's huge, as the San Antonio Spurs have proven. Continuity is vital, and they have it. So those three for sure. And I think right now, by the way, Washington and Atlanta going back and forth with injuries and stuff. I mean, it's been a really fun series, but I can't see either one of those two beating Chicago or Cleveland until you realize, okay, Pau Gasol's now out. Kyrie Irving, you know, he's one ankle turn away from being out. LeBron James almost turned his ankle in a bad way. So you really can't count anybody out. But Cleveland and Chicago right now are the class of the East.
Let's focus in then on that series, and we'll come back and hit some of those others. This has been such a war of attrition. Kevin Love, of course, getting injured in the final game of the Celtics series. J.R. Smith being suspended, Iman Shumpert hobbling. And, of course, I mean, Kyrie Irving and LeBron James, the two biggest stars of the team, dealing with significant issues, I think, with LeBron turning that ankle yesterday. Kyrie Irving, obviously not 100% if you look at those two games in Chicago. Now with Pau Gasol injured, Taj Gibson was limping around in that game. Can you remember a series with two great teams, so many star players on the floor, but at the same time, seemingly all of them having these injury concerns?
Yeah, I've seen it a lot over the years. You know, the Knicks Pacers series, the Knicks Bulls, even the Knicks Heat. You know, those teams, they played so hard every night, all season long. The playoff battles were absolute wars. That it really was a matter of who was a little fresher one night to the next, who had it down the stretch of the game. So, I mean, at this point in the season, pretty much everybody's banged up. Nobody's feeling fresh unless you've been out for months with another injury and you suddenly return, because everybody's feeling, you know, for a fact that the trainers are carrying extra ice, because you go into a locker room now, there's so many bags of ice on various parts of the body. because that's what it's all about. And that's what makes it, you know, in terms of mental toughness as well. I mean, you're physically beaten down, you're tired, you're exhausted, you're hurting, you have aches and pains. Yet, do you have that will? Do you have that mental toughness to fight through it and finish the game strong? Because as we've seen this weekend, it's truly amazing the difference, the fine line between winning and losing. That it's crazy. And futures are decided whether it's a guy, will he be traded, or they won't sign him as a free agent. Whether will they retain a coach? Sometimes it's decided by one bounce of the ball, and it's crazy when you think that that's how close it is between a win and a loss.
How important is Kyrie Irving's health to the Cavaliers' chances to win a championship? Can they go on and go all the way if it's circa 2007 Cleveland Cavaliers, as we saw for much of that fourth quarter, where LeBron James is handling the ball 95% of the time and Kyrie is kind of just relegated to that side role? I mean, could they go on and win the title if he's not 100%? And watching him very closely over those last two games, do you think that's a possibility, or do the Cavs and Cavs fans have to get adjusted and embrace the fact that Kyrie Irving is just not going to be 100% for the rest of these playoffs?
Well, I think it's clear he won't be 100%, but the way they do round-the-clock treatment now, you know, he can come pretty darn close, and he's such a talented player. But there was one sequence, and it wasn't necessarily him limping up and down the court because he had a slight limp, but Jeff Van Gundy spotted it. He took a jump shot, I think it was in the third quarter. He barely got off the floor. And, you know, his athleticism and his quickness are what make him so special, to go along with the skill level, whether it's the shooting ability or the ball handling ability, which is just off the charts. But he barely got off the floor on a jump shot. And that was like, wow, he really is struggling right now. But, you know, again, in a couple of days of treatment, they can get better. And as I said before, there are a lot of people who are banged up right now. So he's going to have to be able to give him whatever he can, because I don't believe they can win a title if he's not playing, certainly. But the other thing, too, is, you know, and all the Chicago Bulls people were talking about this past weekend. The hard thing when you have to play the Bulls, yeah, you could beat Michael Jordan once or twice, but you got to beat him four times. And that's really hard to do. And it's the same thing with LeBron James. You have to beat him four times. And, you know, the Bulls were right there. They were on the verge of taking a commanding 3-1 lead, but he found a way. And that's what the great players do, whether it's Michael Jordan or LeBron James. They find a way where it makes it very difficult to beat him four times and knock him out of the playoffs.
Sort of on the other end of that health spectrum is the Bulls' big superstar in Derrick Rose. And seeing him after so many injury issues and wondering if he'd ever get back to that form again, to see him put up 30 points in a playoff game, to see him bank in a game winner, to see that explosiveness that has made him such a special player in the league and such a special athlete. What does it mean, Mike, to not just that franchise, but to the NBA as a whole, to see him back making those plays and making a difference in the postseason?
It's wonderful for a lot of reasons. Number one, this year, a big part of the season has been defined by injuries. So many star players have been hurt, and it really has been a difficult part of the season. So to have someone come back from devastating injuries, someone who's had to deal with it several times, is wonderful, especially, you know, when it's one of the premier players. Secondly, he really is, he's a unique young man in that his humility is very endearing. Yet he's extremely confident, and I've always found it very difficult to combine a strong inner confidence, yet somehow keep that humility. And he does that. He's got high character. His teammates absolutely love him, but his peers love him as well. You know, when he went down with injury, I don't think I've ever seen more tweets and just talking to players who were, I mean, genuinely upset that he was hurt, because he's that kind of young man. He doesn't taunt anybody when he's out on the court. He just competes as hard as he can against you, and he's just somebody that you can, you know, as a kid, kids can look up to him for the way he conducts himself. He puts the team first. He's got all the ingredients of what we hope are in our NBA star players.
Looking ahead at the rest of this series, Mike, see what you think of this theory. A guy that you have watched a lot over the years might just be the deciding factor in this series, and that is a guy that kept Cleveland in that game that fourth quarter with his outside shooting ability, Mr. J.R. Smith. Can he be this X factor that carries Cleveland over the top in the series and makes that difference when you look at all of these stars and just how evenly matched these two teams seem to be? Can that shooting of J.R. Smith be the factor that puts Cleveland over the top?
Well, he's already been an X factor. I mean, obviously LeBron hit the big shot, but he hit huge fourth quarter threes for the second straight game. Now, obviously, he didn't win game three, but he hit, you know, the critical one near the end to tie it up, and that's what he's able to do. You know, it's funny, Knicks fans are mad. I've talked to Knicks fans over the past few days, and they're mad that he's getting this chance, but it seemed to be the perfect spot. If anybody talks to J.R. Smith, if they meet him and have a conversation with him, he is such a delightful guy to talk to. But he's also one of the most maddening players if he's on your team, because you see that potential. I mean, he's got unbelievable range. He's got the ability to be red hot. He's a good athlete. He's strong. He's fearless. All these great qualities. But he hasn't always been the most professional. When he was in New York, you could clearly see when he was out late the night before when he was playing in a game. He didn't have good work practice habits. And you could see, like, when he wasn't working on his game and how he would get sloppy with his ball handling or his shot wouldn't be on. But since he's come to Cleveland, he's been focused. He even admitted that he stayed out and partied too late in New York. He even admitted that there's not much to do in Cleveland compared to New York, so he's spending more time practicing. And it's coming to fruition for him in terms of his potential. But Cleveland has also seen the bad side, and that, you know, that shot at Jay Crowder cost them two games, and that could easily cost them this first series because they lost game one at home. Maybe they win game one at home against the Bulls if J.R. Smith played, but he lost his temper, and the shot forced him to miss two games. And then he also almost cost them with the technical in game four. I mean, one point makes a difference between win or loss in this, and he was fortunate that they were able to win. Now, it wasn't much of a shove, but it was a shove nonetheless in front of a referee who called a technical foul. So you just got to hope that he stays focused. He doesn't get involved in losing his control because when he's right, he is a fantastic player. When he's wrong, he drives coaches and fans absolutely nuts. But so far, he's been, for the most part, been great in Cleveland.
Speaking of driving people absolutely nuts, how great is it to sit beside Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy together on the same broadcast team once again and have those two go back and forth and reunite this broadcast trio that really drew a lot of acclaim over the years? Of course, Mark went on to coach with Golden State, now back with the NBA on ESPN once again. What has it been like to have that trio reunited?
Well, it's like he never left, and that was right from the start. And that's just years of friendship. We've all known each other for 25 years. Back when Mark was a player, Jeff was the assistant coach, and I was the radio broadcaster for the Knicks. And I really think that makes a big difference. When you've been friends with somebody and you're all around the same age, it's easy to have good chemistry. It's easy to feel comfortable. It's easy with knowing you can say anything, either supporting them or getting on them about something, and know that it's going to be taken the right way. It's so much fun. And the thing I always say is, like, for me, for a play-by-play guy, they're a play-by-play man's dream. Because every single game I do with them, two things happen. I learn and I laugh. And it doesn't get any better than that, because every game they teach me something about either a player or about the sport. And every game they make me laugh because they're genuinely funny. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, you hear forced laughter sometimes on the air when somebody tries to say something funny. But these guys are genuinely funny. And it's so much fun to be on the air. It's just as much fun riding to and from the arena. In fact, some of those conversations are classics. And we're always teasing Jeff that they should do a reality show on just following his life. Mark will always say that to him. And it would be quite entertaining, trust me.
I think if there's one guy in the sports media that deserves a reality show based on his life, I think it'd be Jeff Van Gundy. I mean, there has got to be, Mike. some kind of Larry David, curb your enthusiasm type element to the life of Van Gundy.
You just don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. Now, unfortunately, many of the comments that come out are quite disturbing. but overall, he's not afraid to state his opinion, even if it's unpopular. He's not afraid to criticize. He's not afraid to think out loud. We do get concerned when the games get to be blowouts because that's when his mind wanders and you never know what's going to come about. But he's so smart and he knows so much about the game. And even when he's ranting about something, whether it was flopping a couple of years ago or the Hack-a-Shack stuff now, he does it completely out of the love of the NBA and wants the best for the NBA. And it's just a great combination with him and Mark. You know, Mark was always, he just saw the game differently as a point guard and brought that as a player. His player's perspective is just, it's terrific. And then for him to go coach and be a head coach for 3 years, now he brings the coaching perspective as well. That combination is really interesting to see because he's so in touch with today's player. And those two going back and forth with each other, you know, they disagree a lot, Matt, but they have such two things with them. They have such respect for each other and each other's opinions, even when they're different. And the other thing, they really do like each other and they've always liked each other. So, it makes for a great dynamic. I'm not always the biggest fan of three men boots, but with these two guys, I love it because they're so good together and there's no ego. They don't care who does the talking. They don't care who does this replay or takes it to break. They just enjoy each other's company.
With Mark returning after his stint in Golden State, I know you guys have called several Warriors games this year. Has there been any awkwardness whatsoever around those given the success of the team this year? I know Mark's been fairly open talking about the process and what's been going on in Golden State this year. Of course, Steve Kerr doing such a great job. Mark had some success out there. Kerr's taking it to the next level. Has there been any awkwardness in calling those games, given that Mark Jackson is so fresh out of that situation in Golden State?
You know, from our standpoint, not really. You'd have to ask Mark that. What I will say is this. It can't be easy for him because he did a terrific job there in building these players up to take this next step. And now he doesn't get a chance to coach them when they're ready to take the next step. Now, he certainly takes pride in that he was part of building the foundation and starting it in this upward way that they're going. But it's got to be hard for him. But he hasn't let it affect us on the air. I mean, we talk openly about how good Steve Kerr is. Mark has been very gracious. He said that he felt Steve Kerr was the coach of the year. He still has a great relationship with a number of the players. So I would imagine it's hard for him, especially the games at Oracle Arena, but he hasn't let it affect what he's saying on the air. I think he's done a tremendous job from that standpoint because I know that would bother me. I remember, Matt, when we were doing the 2009 NBA Finals, and that was the Lakers and the Magic. And Stan Van Gundy was obviously the coach of the Magic. And it was a killer for Jeff. Now, that's a little different, obviously, because it's your blood, it's your family. But I remember there was one time the Lakers went on this big run, and Kobe Bryant made this spectacular play. And I'm screaming about the big play, and the Lakers, and I'm looking next to it, and Jeff is just, he's miserable. He's dying inside because he knows his brother is dying inside. Now, he still was able to objectively talk about the series, but it was a killer for him. And, you know, it's different, obviously, with Bark, but I think he's handled it just the right way.
For you personally, Mike, I think it might surprise a lot of people that this is almost 10 years now for you calling the NBA Finals for ESPN and ABC. And I would dare say, as far as the top line guys go in sports broadcasting, having you there for that long may be one of the most surprises just to the general sports fan. Being a part of this for so long and now kind of taking on that mantle from someone I know you and I are both very fond of in Marv Albert and calling the finals for so many years in a row, do you ever take a step back and reflect on that journey, reflect on this, that it's almost been going for 10 years now, and just what level of success you've had in calling these games for ESPN and ABC and reaching, really, to be quite honest, the top of the broadcasting mountain here in your sport?
Well, that's very, very kind of you, Matt. Thank you. But I never take it for granted. I find it shocking that I've done the finals this long. First off, the people at ESPN have been so unbelievable. You know, it sometimes ESPN has looked at this big corporate giant, this 3,000-pound gorilla. But it is a fantastic place to work. And the main reason is the people above, whether it's John Skipper, whether it was George Bodenheimer, now with people like John Wildhack and Mark Gross, all they do is they put you in a position to succeed. They're so supportive, whatever you need. And they're always there in terms of giving you an opportunity to do your best. So that's number one. Number two, you mentioned Marv. You know, Marv is he is and always will be the standard for basketball play-by-play. And that's what we all look up to. And he is, you know, he's a guy that I grew up listening to. I worked alongside him in New York. And anybody who's done basketball play-by-play in my generation, we all feel the same way. He is still the standard. So to be doing something that Marv did by calling so many NBA finals, it sounds hokey, I know, but I take it as such an honor and such a privilege, and I never, ever take it for granted. That there's a lot of people that are responsible for me being able to do it, and I make sure, especially around finals time, that I always thank the people who were there, and it takes a long time to thank them because there's so many. I've always said a line that if I ever had to build a stage for all the people to help me get to where I am, there's not a stage in the world big enough to put people on there who all helped me. So I know I've got nothing but help, and I know I'm kind of rambling a little bit here, but it really is, it's an honor and a privilege that I don't take lightly, and that's why I try and work my hardest to do the best of a sport that I love. The NBA has also been supportive. But it's a sport that I love, and to be able to do that year in and year out has been a dream come true.
There's so many prospective broadcasters that listen to us, folks that are studying for their sports journalism degrees, minor league broadcasters, just everyone that's trying to make a name for themselves in the industry, up-and-comers all over the country that follow the website, listen to the podcast, read our stuff. For you and your position with what you've accomplished in your career, what would be your one piece of advice for those people that are trying to make their way into this sports media industry, especially as a play-by-play person? I know we've had you on a few times, but I don't know if we've ever asked this of you. What would be maybe your one or two seminal pieces of advice and pearls of wisdom for those prospective broadcasters that are out there that want to be the next Marv Albert or Mike Breen?
Hard to say one little piece of advice. A couple of things come to mind, Matty, and whenever I go and talk to some colleges, and I like to do that, I go back to Fordham quite a bit where I went to school. Been able to speak at a number of other schools, and one thing I always tell them is make English your favorite course in school. And I even tell this to high school kids, make it your number one subject, because the ability to speak the language and write the language is so vital, not just in our profession, but in any profession you go into. And Don Imus, who I worked for 14 years, he gave me a book years ago, How to Improve Your Vocabulary. And I looked at him like, that's insulting.
Not that Don Imus would ever insult
him. Somebody ever did for me, because improving your vocabulary, both on and off the air, is really an important thing. So I tell kids that number one. And the other thing is build a foundation first of your broadcasting style. Get the basics down and build from the foundation up. Substance over style first. Once you get established, once you get a reputation, once you get more comfortable, once you get more confident, then you can add the style points. But I think substance over style is still the best thing for a young broadcaster to think about, because that's what's going to be able to last you for a while. If you just come out and you got some flashy style or some crazy signature call, you know, it might be fun, but I don't think it's something that will endure. But if you build that foundation of good technical, good work preparation, good people skills and build it up from scratch, I think that's what's going to be able to keep you going for a long time.
We'll end with a couple quick looks at just the overall state of the league and the postseason, everything happening in the NBA this year. We know ratings have been a bit of a roller coaster ride. LeBron James going back to Cleveland, some of the injury crises that have hit with some of the major superstars in the game, Steph Curry winning the NBA MVP award. So many new faces coming on the scene, new teams like Golden State and Atlanta being the top seeds. Right now, what is your perception of the overall state of the NBA as we kind of move into this era now where it's hard to believe that we're saying this, but guys like LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Carmelo Anthony are now the elder statesmen of the league, and you have these young new stars coming in like Anthony Davis with the Pelicans and so many others, Kyrie Irving, another one, beginning to take center stage?
I think it's in a great place because of the type of young stars that we have, the character of the young stars, their understanding of their place and their importance about not only how they act on and off the court, but the way they play the game. You know, Derrick Rose is a great example. Stephen Curry, you're not going to find a more likable young star with high character, good family values. Now, obviously, a lot of these guys, some you know better than others, but you can just tell. And Anthony Davis is another one. Damian Lillard is another one. Kevin Durant, obviously. So from an individual star standpoint, the league's in a fabulous place. And then the other thing that I love in the last couple of years, and the Spurs have been doing this for a long time, and they finally, I think, finally received their due recognition, how it's still a five-man game. It's still a team sport. And a better team will always beat a collection of talented individuals. And the Spurs showed that. And the Atlanta Hawks showed that this year, that you still have five guys working together can beat any bunch of talented players who don't work well together. And I think that's a great way for the league to go. I think we're going back to ball movement, unselfish play, and it's been really fun to watch from my standpoint the last couple of years.
All right, I'll get you out of here on this, Mike. Just from an entertainment perspective, what would be the best story for the NBA Finals this year? Would it be LeBron looking to bring that title home to Cleveland in his return? Derrick Rose coming back from injury, Golden State continuing what they've doing, Atlanta coming from nowhere playing that team basketball. For you, just as a broadcaster, someone that works in this media side, what would be the best story for the NBA to see unfold throughout the rest of the postseason?
I can't specifically say anyone, just like I will never, ever predict who's going to win a series.
That was my backdoor way to get a prediction.
Right. It's unbelievable about how fans, they hear things or read things, and they seize upon it. Like, say if I said, oh, it'd be wonderful to see, you know, Steph Curry in an MVP year go on and get to the NBA Finals and win a championship. Well, then if I'm doing a Golden State game, they're going to say, oh, you could tell you're rooting for it. I heard you talk about you wanted that team to win. And we really don't. We just want good, close buzzer beaters. And I always go back to the story. One of the first finals that I did was the Celtics and the Lakers. And I remember we did the first two games in Boston. And Laker fans, when I got to L.A. after the first two games, were yelling at me at the Staples Center. Oh, it's obviously you're rooting for the Boston Celtics. You can tell you're a Celtic fan. So then I go back to Boston, and I was on a radio station in Boston after the series was over, and Celtic fans are calling a radio station saying he was clearly a Laker fan. There's no doubt in my mind he was rooting for the Lakers. So you can't win from that standpoint. And for me to answer one of those questions that way, I'd get in big trouble, Matt. So I'm gonna plead the fifth there. But all I will say this, and I know I sound like an NBA homer here, but no matter who gets in, each team of the remaining teams has an unbelievable story to tell. You know, I mentioned Memphis. Memphis isn't the most sexy team out there, but they play so well together, and they play so hard, and they have a bond with their fans that's phenomenal. So as much as, you know, they're a different look than Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, the Splash Brothers in that loud arena, they have just as good a story, as does the Atlanta Hawks. You know, these guys that they all made the All-Star team this year, but are they? They're not perennial all stars. They just play so well together with a young coach who learned from one of the best. So each team has a fabulous story. Whoever gets to the finals.
Wisely handled, Mr. Breen. That tutelage from Don Imus has paid off over the years, I think. All right, then let me narrow it down for you, and then I'll get you out here on this. Selfishly, as an Ohio guy, then let me ask you specifically about this story with LeBron James and the Cavaliers. If somehow they do overcome these injuries, and you wonder with the Ohio connection if maybe there's a Cardale Jones that has to come off the bench for them, with all these injuries, his return back home, what a title for the Cavaliers, for that city and that franchise, mean just as much, or maybe even more, than the multiple titles that he won for Miami?
To the fans of Cleveland, there's no question. If it ever happens, I can't wait to look into the stands, and I know you would see grown men and women crying. I think it means that much. The fans in Cleveland are so passionate. But they've had such misery and torture in not just, you know, having occasional bad teams, but their teams had such crushing defeats in some of the biggest games. Yet they still stay loyal to their fans. They're still passionate. So from that standpoint, I think the emotions would just be absolutely off the chart. We've already seen what his return and their success does financially for the city, which is pretty incredible. In this day and age, how one player can mean so much more financially to a city because of his talent on the basketball court, but what it would mean to the pride of the city and their emotional ties to all their sports, I think would be something absolutely incredible.
Well, wait and see all of the great stories unfolding throughout the NBA postseason. Really kicked up several notches this second round, and hopefully it only gets better from here. Mike Breen will be calling the action for ESPN and ABC through the NBA Finals. So our thanks, as always, to the very diplomatic and very talented Mike Breen for being our guest once again on the AA podcast. Mike, a pleasure as always. Keep up the great work, and hopefully we'll be able to connect once again soon.
Thank you very much for all the kind words, buddy. I really appreciate it.